Hello, this is Informer, a show that reveals the latest ideas from artists, thinkers, and technologists. Informer invites you behind the screen to meet the people sketching, hacking, and imagining the next versions of our world. I'm Roddy Schrock, your host, and in each episode, I spotlight creative minds grappling with a changing world through art, technology, or often both. And I hope you'll subscribe to this podcast at informerpodcast.com, where you can also find show notes, links, and more information on all of the artists and projects that we discuss. I first knew Deborah as an innovative experimental arts leader, founder of A Blade of Grass here in New York. It's one of the leading arts organizations in support of social practice. I've always admired her approach and had the pleasure of getting to know her more over the years as a friend. And in this episode, we have some real talk about the challenges of being a nonprofit executive director. And we discuss how to better align one's work life with one's inner life. And that pretty quickly dove into conversations around astrology. Because that's an interest that I share as well, though I'm not a professional, and Deborah has become a professional. And in New York, where everybody is obsessed with knowing the future, this is a particularly interesting nexus to be in the arts world in particular. So we geek out on astrological changes in the present and upcoming. And if you'd like to learn more about her practice, I encourage you to check it out. I'll have links and so forth on the show notes. So thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy. What are some of your earliest memories of art?
When I think about my earliest memories of art, well, my very earliest memories of art when I was like a little kid were of being told that I wasn't good at it. So, which nobody should ever do, like, you know, for the record. But then, and I think that that might have prompted me to get a lot more into doing art and learning how to, like, resistance can be very motivating, you know? And I specifically got very into practices, right? Like things where you learn a lot of skills or there's a lot of mastery involved. So when I was an undergrad, I was majoring in sculpture and printmaking, which like you can just get lost in just learning how, you know, to do those things. They're so technical. And so when I think about like what I was bringing to art for a long time, it was a desire to learn skills more than anything else. And I think that a lot of that was because I was told that I couldn't, you know? Mm-hmm. So like there's like when something gets broken down as a skill, you can endlessly learn, you know?
Yeah, totally. So it's almost more about kind of the learning of these forms or traditions almost that informed your sense of self, perhaps.
When I looked at the list of the questions that you sent me, the thing that kind of sprang up was just like, oh, right. Like there's always been a tension or like an irresolvable conflict in my life between innovative things and traditions. Like tradition is traditions and ways of doing things that have existed for a long time are like a huge driver in my creative life. And it's, contemporary art became a place for me where that was supposed to be resolvable, right? Because like there's this idea of a contemporary art history in which you're making a history out of your actions right now, you know, and the way that they relate, you know, to other people who are in a position of being in the avant-garde, right? And it's interesting that like that became very unsatisfying for me as a way to, and that doesn't really work anymore in the larger culture either. Like it became like contemporary art's kind of in a mannerist phase, right? Like we're not generating anything new, like in a lot of ways, like we haven't in a long time, but like there's this Yeah, I mean, there's the, it, that's a whole other topic, but in my life, it's been very interesting that like the relationship between something needing to be new or it being new and that being a good thing, and traditions being something that are where I tend to find depth, right? Like there, that's kind of always been the tension.
I mean, and I guess maybe stepping back just a little bit, I mean, could you share sort of what some of the kind of major practice areas have been throughout your life and throughout your career? I met you as, for lack of a better word, as an arts administrator, and it was only after I've gotten to know you more that I've learned that, you know, your interests outside of art, inside of art, and so forth have spanned several practice areas, and I wonder if you could just kind of share a little bit about what where you have focused that energy, you know, throughout your career.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I spent a long time just being a sculptor, learning, you know, so like that was kind of reached its apex when I had a job at Socrates Sculpture Park, right? I was the studio manager there. I lifted heavy things with the crane with the guys, and I taught people how to weld, and I shoved dead cats into garbage bags and, you know, dug foundations, right? Like so there was like this very physical manifestation of just like making other people's sculptures for them mostly, and making my own sculpture, you know. So and then making my own sculpture, that was why I was into that job at a good studio. The and then, you know, kind of I got like a lot of people in New York, you know, like I got into a lot of debt, and I got really angry about the way that the market works, and that anger was very propulsive, you know. I became an arts administrator, I think, out of like a kind of finally accept. I went to UC San Diego for graduate school, which is like weird because like I was there as like a maker the whole time. It's a very conceptual school. I was like Eleanor Anton's last student. I think I vexed her, you know, like I was in some ways I was really into the idea that there's like a this vast world of conceptual art. And in other ways, I was just really like super resistant to it. I brought a lot of like bad spirit to it. And but I needed it like in some way. And it was like a time-released capsule, like the anger of the market like hit like all of these years of just like teaching. Because they wanted me to give up on something, like that need to like build, you know, and they were right. They were absolutely right about that. And I couldn't hear it, you know, for a really long time. And then I got angry enough and I just went like, psh. And I had been doing Aikido. I started doing Aikido actually because Alan Kaprow came into my, like, at UC San Diego, like, I was in one of the studios downstairs where like teachers walked by a lot. And he just walked by my studio. I was drawing judo players and he was just like, you can't draw an experience. You need to do a martial art. You need to do Aikido. And I was just like, I'll do whatever you tell me to do. Like, you're Alan Kaprow. So I was just like, went and typed in the Internet Explorer, you know, like,
Yes.
you know, search engine. What is Aikido? You know, I asked Jeeves or whatever. And it was, and so I'd been doing Aikido for a long time, right? Like, and he was right. Like, I mean, that is a, Aikido, by the way, is just like just Japanese martial art. It's kind of interesting in its own way, and very much a conceptual or social practice kind of thing because it has social transformative goals. But like we can talk about that in a second. But like so I was doing Aikido and I got much more serious about that. Joined a dojo in New York. I'd set it aside for a couple of years because I was just really focused on trying to make art. So I got really into astrology at that time. This is an interest that you and I share.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And Aikido became extremely important for me to maintaining kind of a creative attitude because being an arts administrator is hard. You know that.
It is.
Yeah. And it'll make you sad. You know, sometimes, and so, or it would make me sad from time to time. And so, like, I needed these things that were they would focus me, and they would also, and they would also do something else. I mean, and I don't know quite how to talk about this, but well, there's this thing in studying a martial arts. It's like a way to structure your mind. It's called shu ha ri, three Japanese words, shu ha and ri. And what it means is that like you don't just like you go into a martial art needing to like empty your mind very completely and just fill it up with whatever your teacher's telling you. And that can be for many years in a martial arts context. And then you go, once you have done that, then you can start adding your own self and expressing yourself through the martial art. And then you can finally, once you've kind of figured out what it means to you, then you can throw the form itself away, right? And what like Eleanor and Alan even were trying to get me to do is like rush right to re, right? Like, and I think that a Western mind is so addicted to like the re moment, right? Like, especially in the arts, you know? And so there's this, and A Blade of Grass was like a re moment for me. I gave up and I gave up, and all of a sudden, like something was there to do. And it was exciting to build it. I'm a good builder, you know? So like, so that was exciting, but like I couldn't stay. I'm not spiritually capable of staying in a in re forever. Like I needed to build a lot more shu into my life in order to sustain it, you know? So like, yeah, if that makes any sense.
No, it absolutely does. And I mean, I wonder to just give a little context for those that maybe aren't familiar with A Blade of Grass, here in New York and, you know, nationally and internationally, it's a very unique organization. And I wonder if you could maybe just talk a little bit about what the organization is and how you went through that building process over the years.
Absolutely. A Blade of Grass is the first national to international arts nonprofit that only focuses on socially engaged art as a form, as opposed to art and social justice or art or public art, right? Like, so what we were doing was organizing around the social change goals that come out of relationships and trust. And we were defining socially engaged art in a really specific way. And then we developed a vehicle for looking into socially engaged projects and giving them institutional support that was for projects that were happening in prisons or like among, you know, people that are not like you. You know, and you're not invited to that group, right? Like, so being able to kind of go like, yeah, but we value that, right? So we'll give it money and we'll do research about it in a way that hopefully won't harm the project itself. And we'll make films or do programming, you know. So we wound up kind of creating a really amazing portfolio of information about 60 projects over the course of about a little more than a decade. Yeah. So, and I just left. I don't have that job anymore. So.
Well, and I mean, and I appreciate this background, and I love the way that you're kind of talking about your personal growth as an individual and how that essentially grew into of you know a widespread kind of amplification of many of your ideals in A Blade of Grass and the like real impact that that has had, and you know I've had the pleasure of seeing that up front, having worked with many of the same artists that you've worked with, as well as just kind of observing externally. But I think it's hard to overstate the kind of example that A Blade of Grass has set over the last decade in just changing people's minds, both at institutional levels and individual levels, as you know, consumers of culture, and changing expectations for artists as well. And the kind of direct relationship that you have working with artists is really, you know, to this day, a very unique vision of what an institutional relationship to artists can be. And it's just
and it's emulated by a lot of philanthropy, which is like, I feel like I have to say it because nobody else will ever, but it's,
I know,
but it's an important part of it, right? It's just like, you know, yeah. when other foundations, you know, like Cerdna or, Rainin Foundation, right, will like start to work with artists in ways that include, you know, things like documentation and assessment and the kind of a more holistic approach to figuring out like what the projects are and how to get information out in a way that's
yes.
good for the project. Like,
yeah,
that's great.
I agree. And you went into A Blade of Grass, you essentially built a whole new idea of how an institutional relationship to artists and philanthropy can work. Yeah. And, you know, I agree with you that being an executive director of any nonprofit, especially maybe nonprofit arts organizations, has a whole suite of challenges. Yeah. I am still in that realm.
Yes, you are. Yeah.
And
yeah.
But I mean, but that's one of the things that's so inspiring, is to just see you make very intentional and very deliberate and thoughtful changes to how you can align your life with your ongoing goals. And I guess, you know, especially in this sort of Uranus and Taurus kind of square Saturn moment that we all find ourselves
right
in.
My 10th house of career, my friend. Yeah.
Well, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And how does that feel? Like, how did you get to that point where you decided, well, I guess to really step back, what have you done that has changed and what can you share, and how did you get to that point, and how's it going?
A lot has changed, right? Like, so, well, for a while I was just an arts administrator with like a lot of hobbies and energy to burn, right? Like, so I was like a jockey arts administrator who had to go to an Aikido class or two every day. And that was working, but it wasn't enough, right? And I started studying divination techniques because I was addressing a personal frustration, right? Like, one of the things about being an executive director is everybody wants you to know the future. And I can be so stupid and literal sometimes, right? Like, it's frustrating, right? Like, you're
yeah.
like board members or like foundation, you know, people are just like, tell yeah. me what's going to happen in the future. And I was just, what's the shiny new thing? How are you leading me into the future? And what is the future going to be? Cause I don't want to take any risk. Right. Like, you know, were these like constant questions that I was coming up against. And I was just like, you know, I'm just going to learn how to tell the future. Like, and I was just joking, honestly. And I started with palmistry, and I was just like, God, this is actually kind of interesting. And I started noticing that like every divination system is a system. And I was just like, that's fascinating. And then I started studying astrology, and I was just like, okay, I'm hooked. I'm super interested in this. And I started giving readings to artists that we would work with, right? Like, any mm-hmm. artist who like wanted to talk about astrology with me, I'd be like, I'll give you a reading, it's free, it's part of your package. And and I loved doing it, and it kind of started to work, and I was just like, this is actually a really useful tool. And and the more I got into it, the more I was just like, I use this, I take this seriously, you know, like, and so that was going on one side. This is a skill that I'm building. It's changing my life. It's making me think about different things. It's making me think about things like God, you know, like, and all these other things that, and I was like, and then at the same time, I had a baby, right? Like, right before the pandemic. And I thought that so I got pregnant in 2019, and I thought I was going to be one of those people who had like a power job and was like a power mom. And then the world changed, right? Like, and I was 7 months pregnant when everybody went into lockdown. And it was so interesting because it was like the best thing that ever happened to me. It was the best timing ever. It was scary as can be, but it was, but when it was not, but everything worked out fine. And then basically I had this like absolutely European, you know, kind of maternity leave that I never would have anticipated. And I was just like, this is amazing. And I don't want to, and a blade of grass required so much, you know, feeding and care. And I was just like, I need to take care of someone else in a very deep way. And like, I can't travel once a month anymore. And I can't, I mean, I still wanted to work, definitely. I'm still like an ambitious person, but what I felt I could focus on radically changed. And at the same time, you know, there were a lot of internal pressures inside of a blade of grass around around le leadership, you know, my board was really like everybody was just kind of like in this moment of like, we carried it this far, you know, and so there was also this opportunity to get new people invested. And there was, and I was tired, and I didn't want to do like the things that made a blade of grass great anymore either necessarily. So I gave notice. And it took a really long time. It took Saturn Uranus square, right? Like lots of desire to do a big change, like that is negated at every turn, right? Like it took 14 months to leave my job responsibly. And in that process, we made some really great decisions. We hired a really fantastic facilitator to kind of bring us through a process where we were really intentional about listening to the people that we've worked with in the past, artists mostly, as well as other people in the community, and really listen to like what we were trying to preserve and what was going on in the moment right now. And what we came up with was an opportunity to create an artist-led professional paid board. And that was going to do things like revive the leadership in a really serious way. One of the things that we were hearing a lot is that my me being an artist was really useful to people who worked with the blade of grass. And so we wanted to amplify that and deepen it instead of go like, well, we just need to find somebody who's a good fundraiser now, right? And which was also true, right? Like, you know, so that, because the financial future of any nonprofit really depends on somebody who's gonna you know, really be able to bring a different skill set than me as the founder, actually. So it was this great comprehensive remaking that is still unfolding, and I'm super proud of it. And I'm proud of the way that the new board, both the new board and the historic board members who were like, you know, we've been doing this a long time, you know, we're not fully invested, you know, they did a lot too to like make this happen, you know. So I'm really proud of everybody's, yeah, I'm really proud of the way that everybody stepped up to give it a new shot.
And what's so beautiful about that is it feels like it's a new step for the organization, but the kind of formal, structural thoughtfulness that is allowing that new form to unfold is something that's in the organization's DNA and, you know, from your founding of it. And to just kind of see it take these new dimensions and kind of materialize in this new interesting way, just feels like, you know, kind of now I'm like, well, how could it have happened otherwise? Because
Right.
it's such a inherent way of the way that the organization has worked and continues to work, and is very exciting.
Thank you. But it gets back to that sense of form. Like, I'm a formalist, you know, like I really care about like traditions and forms and like the way that things are structured. And there is a degree of innovation that's allowed in that when you really deeply invest in knowing how things work.
I mean, as someone who, you know, I guess from a personal perspective for me, like I grew up studying music and mm-hmm. have a background in studying composition and performance and so forth. And so I'm very appreciative of that way of thinking of tradition as a means to innovate or to think structurally about how things have been done as a means to kind of unfold new ways of thinking. And I guess kind of following on that a little bit to sort of bring us a little bit more to the present, we had briefly touched upon astrology as something that you've continually become interested in. And I remember on one of the, I believe it was one of the ED newsletters or there was a point where you sort of told everybody that you were quitting your job and you're going to become a full-time astrologer.
Yeah.
And pretty much everyone was like, wow, and I can't believe it, and you're amazing. That was kind of the, you know, uniform response. And I guess I'm so curious to just hear from you. I can completely see from a more kind of like formal level from what you're saying how you got to that point and how you made that decision. But thinking about that abstractly is very different than
doing it. Yeah.
And I would love to hear about the doing it and how does it feel? How is that going? What are the things that kind of excite you about this emerging kind of professional practice that you're taking on
hold in the moment, you know? So there, basically what I did was I quit my job so that I could move to an affordable place, right? I'm moving to Ithaca. I'm in the process of doing that. My husband got a job chairing the art department there, so I don't need to have a job. I'm going to become an astrologer, which I'm, you know, already doing. I'm already seeing clients. You know, and I can talk about that a lot. And then the other thing that I intend to do is, and this is important conceptually, is I'm going to open an Aikido dojo. So conceptually, it's all about, you know, kind of really devoting myself to the things that were helping me keep an empty mind and a clear spirit, right? Like, and kind of deepening that, getting back to Shu. You know, and on a practical level, it's easier than it seems, right? Because it's like, I was saying this to you in an email, right? Like, it's, the thing about being an arts administrator is that you manage a lot of relationships, you know, and you help people belong to what you're doing by listening to what they need and then trying to make a fit. And there's a certain amount of like holding emotional space and kind of magic, you know, involved
in
like making those connections. And it's exciting to take that skill and apply it in a way that is more direct and less about, and more straightforward, and the transaction is super clear, right? So on a practical level, I mean, that just means like getting an astrology reading is a fun hour that is spent listening to somebody give you a sense of what your karma might be. Right? Like, I think that that's a good way to put it. And then you can start to get into a dialogue, and the dialogue is different based on what everybody needs, right? Like, you know, you can get a reading that is, like I've had clients want to talk about like a very specific thing that they're going to start, like a new business venture. Or there are people who are just like, I just don't know what is up with my relationship with my parents. And I feel super murky about that. Or, you know, I need to address a very specific worry about my kid. Or, you know, it can be anything, right? But like, there's so much information in a chart. And in timing techniques, as you know, like you can really just start to like, you can just start to have a conversation about that with somebody else, right? Like and what I think is really working in my astrology practice is that I'm bringing a desire to deeply learn astrology. I'm a nerd about learning new things, you know, like I just love it. I devour it as you do. So there's that. But then, you know, marrying that to, you know, just a life of going like, well, I've built like some really big physical things and I've built a really big organizational thing. And I've known a lot of different kinds of people in that. And I've managed a lot of different kinds of rules. And I've been in this environment that requires a lot of discipline. And I've been in this environment that requires a lot of understanding that this is like the old West, you know, like, and I've been in environments where like I have to learn how to say the right thing, right? Like, so there's this, especially because I'm older, you know, like astrology, as you know, is having a real renaissance right now, right? Like, people in their 30s are super into it in 20s. And it's cool to be able to be like, I'm 50. Come to me, and I will tell you about your first Saturn return, right? Like, and it's great to be able to be in like a mentoring role and to be able to, you know, and to be able to provide guidance about like, because I've just had a lot of different life experiences, right? So it's a pretty nice fit. It's like a really, it's creative because you're really kind of telling, when you cast a chart for somebody, you don't know them. Like you're really kind of like figuring out like, well, who might they be? Oh, interesting. They're asking about this and like, this is going on in their chart. Fascinating. Okay. So like, I think that the things behind that are going to be like this, and this. And then, you know, but then you listen and then you're like, aha. This one was affirmed. These two, that makes sense, but that's not what's going on here. Okay, so now what? There's this like, you know, kind of sleuthing and problem solving in real time that's like super exciting. And then you get to know someone, and people are just so beautiful, right? That like, you know, then this thing that gets revealed is this, then there's this third thing, right? Which is that there's this thing that gets revealed, which is like, we can know this. Why? It's so mysterious. Like it must be like, why does this work? And like, that's really exciting. And then it makes me feel really good about the world that we live in, right? Like, I mean, I don't know. It just, yeah.
I absolutely hear you. And I mean, one of the things that I've really appreciated learning more about astrology is that it gives me a symbolic framework to start to make some bigger assumptions and understandings about myself, about changes in the world, and to just be able to sort of identify, you know, symbolically an element and sort of be able to point to that and to talk about it and, you know, and abstractly, you know, even for myself or with someone else. It's really powerful in the kind of effect it can have. And I just, you know, and to hear you talk about that as your practice and something that you're just experiencing daily or however often it's very compelling to think about how that, you know, must be kind of mirroring back to you and the kind of growth that you're making as well.
It does, yeah, it does a couple of different things. I mean, you know, one, as you know, like the Stoics were super into astrology, right? And it's a way to accept that you can't control everything. You know, and it's a way to name, you know, this idea that like there are a lot of things that you have to do that in like more like a Zen framework, that's another world, right, that I'm very interested in. In a Zen framework, like karma is very important, right? And this idea that you're meant, you know, to kind of be a part of something that's much bigger than yourself, right? Like, and there's this, the way that astrology visualizes that for you can make you into somebody who can handle a lot more. And I'm very into that as a martial artist, right? Like, I mean, I've spent my entire life, like, just pushing myself to do more things physically, to do more things spiritually, to do more things. You know what I mean? Like I need to push and push and push and push and push, And there's this way in which knowing that something really intense, like a big transit, I don't know, we won't even name it, right? Like the Mars North Node Uranus conjunction that's going to happen in my 10th house, like next week, right? Or like right now, basically, right? Like that's knowing that it's about something much larger than myself, and knowing that other people are going through it too, and knowing that it can be pointed to as something outside of me
Exactly,
is a
yeah.
huge part of like what my it's a huge part of what mindfulness practices are kind of also trying to teach, right? And it's a way to make it less, it's a way to make it something that I can give myself to.
Yeah, I love how you put that. And when you describe that pointed to something outside of yourself is actually an empowering element. I have found that to be very true for me as well. And I think there's something very unique about that that I've not seen in other kinds of practices. And I guess sort of moving from that, I mean, in some ways, the way you're talking about your astrology practice and your history of various forms of focus and practice and throughout your life, it almost sounds like you're still talking about social practice in a way, but maybe just on a more kind of one-to-one basis. And do you feel that kind of connectivity?
I do. And let me think about this for just a second, because I don't want to sell out like everything I've been doing for the past more than a decade at all, right? Like
Of course. No, yeah.
disclaimer first, right? There are really important artists that are doing this under the rubric of art that need support, and they need their thing understood as art. That's super important, and I'm not dissing that. One of the things that being in a position, and at the same time, like there's a whole world of people doing amazing things that are social practice, basically, that do not benefit from being called art. And that is also okay, right? And one of the things that I'm so glad that I'm, how do I put this so that I'm being really helpful? When I was younger, I needed the affirmation that something was being valued as art in a way that I don't now. And I understand why I needed that, and I'm glad, and I think that there are things that really do need that, and that that's not just about the artist's maturity. Like there are times when you need to pull something out of a culture and separate it a little bit and give it this like separate space, like Hakim Bey would call it, like the temporary autonomous zone. Okay, so like that's super important. I think that there's another world of things that can just benefit from the ideas in socially engaged art and just be cool stuff that is happening in the world. And I'm more interested at this point in my life in making cool stuff that is happening in the world that is engaged. Yeah. So to that point, like, yeah, this is an engagement practice, astrology is a really great way to understand people always fitting together. Right, like you and I have a synastry. We came and things happened in such a way so that both you and I are talking. It would be very interesting to throw up both of our charts and like look at like when we started talking about all of this stuff, what was going on individually and what did we share, like for example, or you have a tendency to come across people in your life who are going to help you, right? Like through things. And when you look at like the sinistry of that, you're like right, like my like one way to put that is to say like so my husband has this fourth house of family where I have my sixth house of service, right? Like, and when he has difficulty in his family, I'm always going to be there in service. He's going to be able to help, right? And there are other things like that in what we're doing. You can see the connections between people in a way that's very nameable and in a way that is points to the challenges so that you can rise to them, right? And that's totally exciting, you know, to me, because I find relating to people, like a lot of people who are so super into social practice, I find dealing with people and interactions like actually incredibly difficult. And that doesn't make it so that I don't want to do it. It just makes it so that I'm just like fascinated by it. You know, how do we relate to each other? Same with Aikido. Aikido is a martial art that was grounded in, it's a Japanese martial art that is fundamentally non-competitive, and its founder was very much interested in this idea of creating a universal world peace through the practice of martial arts, right? And he had lots of ideas about that that I will not get into in this space. But the fundamental concept is that if you and I are doing Aikido together, we take turns and we practice conflict in a very ritualized way so that we can learn something kind of more metaphysical about how fighting works and how our energy works, right? Which is very similar in a lot of ways. And it's about the idea that, like, you know, we're always kind of in the state of perpetual, you know, like disharmony with each other, but we can learn how to be in a state of harmony even when we're punching and even when we're punching each other, right? Like there's this promise in it of learning how to transform conflict that I've always been very addicted to. But yeah.
Oh, I love that idea of just giving form to the fraught nature of human relations, and then you can point to it. And as soon as you can point to it, then that gives you the potential to resolve it or to at least get to a different place.
That's
And
exactly right. Yeah.
going from that and thinking more about the future for you as you really do move into a deep and regular astrology service and practice to, you know, the larger world. At this point in time, if you were to sort of summarize, what is one thing that you know about astrology as someone who studied it and is practicing regularly? What is one thing that you feel you know about it that you wish everyone did?
I've been thinking about this question because you gave it to me in advance, and it's so good. The one thing that I wish people knew is that it's not for, is what it's for, right? It's not for getting away with things or making fate better, right? It's for looking into what you cannot change so that you learn something about your relationship to yourself and other people so that you can accept more. It's fundamentally metaphysical, and it induces a it can be used in all kinds of circumstances that are not this. Like people use it to trade for financial trading. People use it for, like, there are people who are super into electional astrology who, you know, will elect the best time to do everything, like all the time. That sounds really frustrating to me, but
I know. I feel like I'd go crazy.
I would go nuts. Like, horror area is a very interesting thing that you're studying right now that I have questions for you about, right? Like, there's this can find your keys with it. I guess the other thing to that, right? Like, so you can pull a horror area chart to find your keys, for example. And I've successfully done that. Like, that works. The thing, though, that I think is super important is like, who is telling me, or what is telling me that my keys are at, like somebody's at like my friend's house down the street to the north. You know, like what,
Yeah,
like
what's going on?
how does it know? You know, like there's this the unknowability of it, and being able to rest in the unknowability of it is so much more important to me than like kids right now are entering a moment of like total astrology saturation. It's in
It's wild.
Snapchat. It's in Snapchat. You have to turn it off in Snapchat. It automatically calculates like your birth information, your astrology for you. And there's no sense of like awe or wonder around it. And what they're using it for is very like, I'm going high Jupiter, right? I'm like, it's awe-inspiring. And it's about this larger thing. We're all interconnected. Like that's what it's for. And what they're getting is very mercurial. They're getting like, this is a red flag, and I don't like Leos, and like Scorpios are icky and or whatever. And they're getting memes. And it's this very interesting thing where that feels really unproductive and unhelpful to me.
I hear you on that, and I don't think I'm as exposed to that version of it as you probably are, and I just find it fascinating to when I hear things like that. And it all almost makes me think about maybe some of the pop psychology versions of astrology that have existed in times past and that are very different than, maybe what you're studying and doing. The questions that it raises are profound and they're weird. And it makes no sense.
And they resonate through other types of kind of spiritual, biological,
Absolutely.
metaphysical inquiry, right? Like so like you can pull up your zodiacal releasing for your entire life, and basically you can describe every part of your life from multiple perspectives, from the perspective of your love life, from the perspective of your career life, from the perspective of like just fortune, what happens to you, stuff you can't control. And you can literally lay out your entire life like a whole book to a degree. And that calls into question very serious, like, basic questions about how much free will you have. And at the same time, Robert Sapolsky is like, well, on a met like on a cellular level, and on a quantum level, free will is impossible.
Well, exactly. And that's what honestly gives me hope for so many, well, how to put this? Like these, the fact that so many people I know, or that so many people I don't know, but that there's some sort of social interest or cultural interest in these questions, and that that's just becoming more the norm, I find real hope in that. I mean, I think that these are questions that actually make me feel very kind of excited for new forms of how the world might unfold in upcoming years, and especially in this moment of chaos, it is a place to look for new kinds of answers, and I find that very gratifying.
Well, and we have to actively. I'm gonna like create attention with what I just said, right? I'm like, there's no free will, and now I'm like, and we have to do something specific to change things, right? Like, I'm gonna contradict myself, because you're right. Like, talking about the future, the thing that I've been kind of interested in, we've been living astrologically, we've been living through the Saturn Uranus square of 2021 and 2022. And eclipses happening in the fixed axis as well, right? Like, so all the things that are not supposed to break are going to break and change, like, and it's going to take a long time, and it's going to be really grinding, and it's going to really suck, and it's going to be very incremental and painful and slow. And then, it's going to be very interesting in 2023. Things that energy pattern is going to massively shift. We're going to look at like 5+ years of a Saturn Neptune co-presence. They're going to get things are going to get like, and on a personal level, like that could be really awesome. You get a lot of discernment around what's real, like all of these things about like misinformation and conspiracy theories and what we believe. And especially while Saturn and Neptune are in Pisces, right? Like, we're going to have a really nice extended opportunity to like bring form to the formless, right? Like, that's one expression of that archetype. But like on a more mundane level, things are going to get so like conspiracy theories and misinformation are because archetypes can work two different ways, right? Like you can see the other side of the coin being misinformation like reigning and eroding the systems itself, right? Like because we don't believe in anything, because we can't like figure out what truth is or real or like a foundation of reality, it will erode, in some or dissolve, and I think that that's kind of an interesting challenge that we're all facing, especially in the field of culture, especially within a circle like astrology, right? Like, so, astrologers are using the exact same social tools that QAnon is using, YouTube channels, Twitter, social media platforms, right? Like, like you can put anything out there, right? And you will get an audience around it that will believe it, right? And that's giving astrology a massive moment, right? Which is good because I think that it's an interesting phenomenon that has never hurt my life ever. It's like never done anything but good things for me. But and whenever I pay attention to it, it works, like so. But there's no fundamental difference, kind of, between one form of knowledge that is not traditionally acceptable and another, So it's just like what it'll be very interesting to kind of see what happens to things like truth. Who's already having a hard time,
I'd love to do a follow-up conversation about this like 2 years from now and see and really see where things are at. I
How
mean,
is that Saturn Neptune Pisces co-presence Saturn co-presence going? Yeah,
boy.
it'll be very interesting, I think that for personal, like for people, it has the potential to be very good. I'm super looking forward to it. Like, because I like rigor in my woo, like that's great, for me. But yeah, but we'll see. But we'll see. What happens? It's interesting. Like we could wind up in a state that is much more Soviet in nature, where we just don't know what's going on, and everything becomes very difficult, like because you can't believe anything, so you can't trust anything, so why do anything? And it could turn into a lot of apathy, for example.
True.
It's already kind of here.
I know. I was going to say, I mean, in some ways, what you're laying out doesn't sound terribly far off.
Uh-oh.
And just knowing that we're sort of getting towards the end of our time together, are there any more kind of specifics that are kind of upcoming for you that you would like to share?
I'm in a building phase, so I am, yeah, I have a good newsletter that I send out once a month.
It's really good.
Oh, good. I have a good newsletter that I send out once a month. I'm just developing my client base, and I'm looking forward to getting to Ithaca finally after a month in Lisbon. And I'm just going to be going to the park with some legal waivers and some extra weapons. And I'm just going to join me. And I'm just going to start trying to teach people Aikido.
You know? Love it.
And it's very exciting. It's actually very exciting to be at the beginning of something, of everything.
Yeah.
It's scary, you know, but it's super exciting.
Well, I mean, and just congratulations on everything. I mean, just the energy and the decisiveness and the intentionality that you're just putting into this, having kind of observed it from the outside, is just really inspiring. And I'm sure that only good things are going to come from everything that you're doing. And I'll include a link to your newsletter and your website and so forth on the show notes. And you are accepting new clients at this time, just to confirm?
Yes.
Great.
Yeah.
Until next time, thanks for joining me at Informer.
About it, at least in terms of what we can put into an hour.
This has been really, really great. And I appreciate you taking the time today, and it's good to see you.
I'm honored. It's always great to see you, Roddy.